It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News. I'm Ben Kiefer. The national measles outbreak is putting the issue of childhood vaccinations in the spotlight. More than 100 Americans have come down with measles since an outbreak began at Disneyland in California in December. And most of the sickened were not vaccinated, apparently because of concerns about vaccines' safety. Those are concerns most medical experts say are unwarranted. This half hour, we want to look at how Iowa fits into the debate over immunization. Joining us, first of all, Dr. Patricia Quinlisk, State of Iowa epidemiologist, joining us by phone. Dr. Quinlisk, welcome back to the program.
Thank you for having me.
Are there any suspected or confirmed cases of measles in Iowa at present?
Well, since this all began, we've investigated over 30 cases of possible measles, and fortunately, they've all turned out not to be measles. But we just, are getting these reports of possible measles every day, and we're also getting reports now of people being exposed to real cases of measles. Fortunately, so far, they've all been immune and have not gotten measles.
Where is the closest case of confirmed measles in the Midwest, in surrounding states?
We've had it in basically most of our surrounding states, including Nebraska, South Dakota, Illinois, et cetera, and cases are continuing in some of those states, which does put Iowans at risk because you don't know when somebody's going to either go over to someplace like Chicago and get exposed, or somebody from Chicago is going to come over to Iowa not realizing that they're carrying measles.
Right, and this is highly contagious.
It is incredibly contagious. You know, we think about the flu and think, well, as long as I'm not around somebody who's got the flu, I won't get it. And in general, that's true. The problem with measles is you can walk into a room where somebody with measles left 2 hours before that, and you're still exposed to measles. So you can imagine somebody walking through a mall or an airport, even the grocery store, can do if they have measles.
Tell us about measles, a profile of it. If you were infected, if you come down with it, how dangerous is it?
Well, it can be quite dangerous, especially to very young people or people who are in their young adulthood or people who have medical conditions already. It usually starts with a high fever. Often you have a cough or a runny nose and even conjunctivitis or redness of the eyes. And then a couple days later, you'll get this rash that spreads all over your body. And about 1 or 2 in 1,000 can die of this. And right now, about somewhere around 15% of people are being hospitalized. So this is not a mild disease. It's one you want to avoid at all costs.
How has the Iowa Department of Public Health reacted to the measles outbreak in California and, as you described, in surrounding states?
Well, as I said, we're trying to get the word out to our healthcare providers to suspect measles if they see somebody with a high fever, and especially high fever with a cough and runny nose and red eyes followed by a rash. We're also trying to get the word out to everybody to make sure that your vaccinations are up to date because you may not know when you're exposed to somebody with measles. And then last thing, we're just trying to educate the public on just how bad measles can be and just how important it is to protect yourself.
Mm-hmm. I bet you if you went up to people on the street and said, are you vaccinated against measles? Most of us would not know. Is that part of the problem? Are we, most of us, vaccinated against measles?
Unfortunately, no. If you were born before about 1957, chances are that you're immune just because there was so much measles going around, you basically could not have made it through childhood without having measles. But people born between 1957 and about 1972 may not have had measles and may not have ever been vaccinated. And that's why you're seeing most of the people around this outbreak associated with Disneyland are actually adults in that age range. Now, starting if you went to school in 1977 or later, you were required to get one dose of measles-containing vaccine to go to school. And then after 1991, anybody starting school after that would have been required to get two doses of the MMR vaccine or the measles vaccine. But the problem is those people who started school before 1977 may not have gotten the vaccine, may not have ever gotten the disease, and are walking around not realizing that if they get exposed to measles, they're going to get sick.
So what are you telling people to do? Get in touch with the doctors, find your medical record, and get vaccinated as soon as possible?
Well, and that's exactly right. Anybody who doesn't know whether they're vaccinated or aren't sure they ever had the disease should go get vaccinated. And I'll just tell you, I was born before 1957, but my mom couldn't remember for sure whether I had measles, and I just went ahead and got vaccinated. It doesn't hurt to get vaccinated if you've had the disease. It doesn't hurt to get vaccinated if you've already been vaccinated. All that will happen is your immunity will be boosted, which today is not a bad thing to happen. So if you're unsure, best thing to do is just go ahead, get vaccinated. That way you can be sure that you're not going to get sick.
Okay. As I mentioned at the outset, most of those sickened in California were not vaccinated, also because of concerns about vaccine safety. Let's address that head on quickly. How safe are vaccines?
Vaccines are one of the safest medical interventions we have in our society, but I won't tell you that there's absolutely no risk at all. There are a few people who will have a reaction to the vaccine, but in most cases, it's going to be redness around the side of the shot. I mean, we sort of expect that. Most people will have no problems at all with it, and believe me, the disease is much, much worse than any reaction you're going to have to the vaccine.
Okay, the state has seen the number of families using exemptions. Here in Iowa, you can have an exemption either for medical or religious reasons. I think it's tripled since 2000, the year 2000. Now that represents some 8,000 children with such exemptions, less than 2% of Iowa's kids. Are you worried about that dramatic rise in exemptions?
Well, I am, because we know for diseases like measles, in order to protect those people who cannot be vaccinated, for example, the children with leukemia or the babies, we need to make sure everybody around them is vaccinated so nobody will carry the disease to them. And for that to happen, we need to ensure that basically almost everybody else is vaccinated. So when we get vaccinated, we're not only protecting ourselves against that disease, but we're also protecting all those people around us from being exposed to disease, particularly the babies and the people who cannot get vaccinated.
Mm-hmm. So what do you think is the best approach to people who are skeptics here, who, well, in this debate, debates over vaccinations are most often cast as arguments that over the integrity of science, they question the science. How do you approach that problem?
Well, it's difficult, but most of the time I would tell people to go and talk to the healthcare provider. You'll see that basically every single healthcare provider is convinced of the necessity of vaccination because they're the people who have seen children who have been desperately ill or maybe even have died of some of these vaccine-preventable diseases. So they know how important it is. So go to your healthcare provider and talk to them about your concerns, have them, you know, discuss your concerns with you, and then hopefully you'll go ahead and get vaccinated because that is really important to protect yourself and those people around you.
You've just joined us. Dr. Patricia Quinlisk is joining us this half hour, State of Iowa's epidemiologist. We're talking about Iowa and the national measles outbreak. No confirmed cases, as Dr. Quinlisk told us a few minutes ago, of measles in Iowa, but we're just talking about vaccinations and how concerned we should be about this measles outbreak, primarily in California, but in other parts of the country as well. Now joining us as well, Susie Poulton is Director of Health Services for the Iowa City School District. And we're asking Susie on the program to give us a view from the local community's perspective. Welcome to our program.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
So how concerned are you at this level, the Iowa City School District level, which includes Coralville, North Liberty, about the measles outbreak?
Well, when this all comes up, we are always somewhat concerned because we bring large groups of children and staff together on a daily basis. We're cautious at this point since there are no cases here in Iowa. So we're just kind of standing by and waiting. We really rely on the health department and to guide us if there would be an outbreak on what we would need to do. But at this point, we're standing by and listening and following the news. And if there would be a case in our community, then we would do some action, some education.
What would be that action?
Primarily education, to let our parents know that there has been a measles. There's measles cases. We would want to caution those children that have exemptions and are not immunized, especially, and caution them that there is a case, and so or cases. So that's the approach that we take. It's education.
Mm-hmm. Is there chatter? Are you hearing through administrators and teachers that parents are concerned?
You know, we haven't heard a lot of chatter at this point. But I'm sure if there is a case in Iowa, and this is with other communicable diseases too, if there's a case in our area, then there will be chatter, definitely.
Mm-hmm. Well, what about what I was asking Dr. Quinlisk about the exemptions, mm-hmm. the rise in exemptions? I imagine that is reflected in the Iowa City Community School District as it is across Iowa. How do you address that?
Well, you know, Iowa law allows for exemptions for medical reasons or religious reasons. So we require that parents complete a medical exemption or the religious exemption, and then we really don't ask the questions after that if they have completed the appropriate paperwork.
They fill out paperwork. That's it. Does it need to be
pretty much it
for the medical one? Does it need to be signed by a doctor?
Yes, the medical one does need to be signed by a doctor. Unfortunately, the religious one only needs to be notarized by a notary public.
Okay.
And when you actually talk to the parents, it's not so much religious as it is a fear. It's a personal preference and sometimes boils down to a fear of the side effects of the vaccine or the danger of the vaccine. Of course, we put it out there, information out there that we support immunizations. It's really important that children are immunized. And we know, as Dr. Quinlis says, they're not dangerous per se. But there are different theories of why they're dangerous, but we as a district, we promote them and support them and really encourage our families to do that.
Dr. Quinlisk, I understand in California, I've been reading reports that there's talk of getting rid of some of these exemptions because of this measles outbreak. Would that be something that you would think would be a good move? I know it's not the question standing here before us as Iowans, but as public policy for health.
Well, California and Iowa are different. California allows what's called philosophic exemptions, which allows a parent just to say, I don't want to vaccinate my child. That's not allowed in Iowa. As the other person said, we allow somebody who truly has a medical reason for not getting vaccinated. But the other one is they have to basically sign and say, I have a deeply held religious belief that does not allow me to vaccinate my child. They are not supposed to be using that for a philosophic or a moral or other excuse. But it should be a religious.
Right, but so, anybody knows you could just sign that paper and get off it because you can use the law, and people do use the law that way, don't they?
Well, I hope they don't, because they're going to sign something saying that they have a deeply held religious belief. That's what they're swearing to on a legal document. So I hope that they're not using it for inappropriate reasons. But what it means is here in Iowa, we don't have the level of parents opting out of vaccinating their children that they do in California. So far in Iowa, we do a pretty good job at keeping all of our children vaccinated. Unfortunately, it's higher than what we would like, and we'd like a lot of those children and their parents to really think seriously about this and go, you know, get vaccinated at this point, because there is a real risk of measles coming into Iowa.
Mm-hmm. Where is the best source? Someone's listening right now, a parent saying, you know, based on some reports I heard on television or I heard on the radio or read in the newspaper, I have this fear. I guess I didn't really look behind if there was science behind this fear. Where can someone go to inform themselves 100% about the science to know about the very, very limited risks of vaccinations?
Well, I would tell them that there's very good websites, the Centers for Disease Control here in Iowa, the Iowa Department of Public Health, and, of course, your own health care provider. Those are the best places to go to get the science behind the truth about immunizations.
Okay. Dr. Patricia Quinlisk with us, State of Iowa epidemiologist. Susie Poulton is Director of Health Services for the Iowa City School District. Let's add another person to our conversation. Lila Rue is with us. Lila is an Iowan who survived not only measles, but a host of other diseases, including polio. And she is co-coordinator and treasurer of Iowa Polio Survivors. Lila, welcome to our program.
Good morning. Thank you for having me.
Great to have you with us. Now, we'll talk about your organization in just a moment, but tell us, you contracted polio at the age of 10. Tell us what happened. What was that experience like?
Well, I was living in rural Lucas County at the time, and I got to feeling quite sick, and we had moved there shortly before from Osceola and had a favorite doctor there, Dr. Harkin. He had Harkin Hospital there. And so my parents decided to take me over there to have me checked out. And he gave me a spinal tap and said, well, she does have polio. You will have to take her to Des Moines to Blank Children's Hospital. And that was in September of 1950. I had just turned 10 on September 5th, and before the month was out, I was in the hospital. So,
how long was your hospital stay?
9 months.
9 months, the better part of a year. And what conditions did you have in the hospital? Were you in a bed? Were you in other areas? What was the treatment?
Yes, I was in bed. I had hot packs, and that was hot pieces of wool cloth that they would bring steaming hot and wrap your arms and legs in it. I guess that was supposed to relax the muscles or something. It smelled bad, like wet wool does, and it was not comfortable, but that was a big form of treatment when I first went in, and then had physical therapy down the road a month or two, and I didn't have to be in an iron lung, thank goodness, but the halls were full of iron lungs and special rooms for those, and so the sound of the breathing of the iron lungs sort of haunted me at the time.
Okay, perhaps we can have Dr. Quinlis jump in here. Iron lung, that's a term that goes back many decades. Can you tell us briefly what that is?
Sure. The thing that polio would do is would stop the muscles that allows you to breathe, so the children would actually have trouble breathing. An iron lung was a way of basically forcing the chest to rise and fall so that it basically helped the child breathe.
Mm-hmm. Are they still in use in any cases?
Today we would call them different things. They would have something strapped usually around their chest that would help them breathe rather than putting their whole body inside a machine. So our technology has improved. Problem is polio. There's still no treatment for polio other than just trying to support the body. But some of these people are permanently paralyzed even today.
Lila Rue, do you have any lasting repercussions because of polio?
Yes, I do. Wear a back brace and an ankle brace, but I've been quite active. I don't think I've missed anything in my life that I really wanted to do, except maybe dance. And I've had a good, fulfilling life. So I guess I'm satisfied that I'm able to do that.
Mm-hmm. As I mentioned, you're co-coordinator and treasurer at Iowa Polio Survivors. What support does the group offer?
We have speakers come in sometimes. We have Dr. Balls and Dr. Kinker from Des Moines, who are physiatrists who really understand the body. They take care of people primarily who've had strokes and things, and they've been able to help us considerably with our needs. And just the camaraderie of us being together with other polio survivors, sharing our stories, and that sort of thing is a real comfort to the rest of us. We know we're not in this by ourselves. So.
You know you belong to a unique demographic, a unique group that remembers a time before the polio vaccine.
Yeah.
What are your thoughts when you hear about the measles outbreak and the debate over immunizations going on in this country, exemptions for whatever reason? What are your thoughts?
I don't think that there should be any exemptions. I think that the miracle of the vaccinations, we all have a God that we answer to, and I think the people who, for religious reasons, don't feel like they can take the vaccine should know to give the credit to God for giving these men the science and the miracle of these vaccines that are provided to help prevent these horrible diseases. I can remember I was 6 years old when I had the measles, and I can remember how sick I was, and things like that children don't have to go through.
Right. When you were a child, were measles feared, or was it more or less just thought of as uncomfortable
I think it was just thought of as uncomfortable, really, at the initial set of my measles. I felt like I was sicker than I was when I entered the hospital with polio. I still have a teddy bear in my home that helped get me through that period. I was at home, but as you know, the fevers would rise and fall, and I had to keep my room dark and all that sort of thing. And so it was a memorable time for a six-year-old, so I was quite sick.
Thank you very much, Lila Rue, an Iowan who survived a number of diseases, including measles and polio. Dr. Quinlisk, we have just a couple minutes left here. I don't know if there are any other things that to add to this specific topic, or perhaps you can branch out and tell us how we're doing in terms of the flu this year.
Well, the flu was starting to go down, but I will tell you that in the last week or so, it started to go back up again, and we sometimes do get a second peak of flu at the end of the flu season. So unfortunately, I think we're starting to see indications that we might see that second peak. So I just remind people that the flu vaccine is really important, too, to prevent another disease that we know comes to Iowa every year.
Right. But we have been hearing that the flu vaccine this year was not very effective or didn't exactly target the strain that it would have should have.
Mm-hmm. Well, unfortunately, the flu, unlike things like measles or mumps or polio, it does something that we call drift. It changes slightly every year, and that's why you have to get that vaccine every year. And this year, rather than drifting at the end of the flu season, which is what we typically see, it actually drifted at the beginning, which means that flu vaccine that they spend 6 months making wasn't as good as match as we would have liked. You still got some protection out of it. It was still a good thing to get, but it certainly wasn't as well matched as we in public health would have liked it to have been.
Does the flu that's present right now it relate to the flu that will be around next year at this time? Is it a completely new strain?
Well, this one is what we call a B strain, the strain that we've seen so far causing all of the illnesses and hospitalizations and the unfortunate deaths has been an A strain. An A is usually more serious. Right now we're seeing a B strain come back and cause a second peak, but we're hoping that it won't be quite as serious because, as I said, Bs usually are a little bit milder than the As, but it could predict that next year we'll see a totally new strain of flu coming up. And again, that's why it'll be very important to go get your flu shot next September or October, too. So whatever happens and whatever strain pops back up in Iowa next year, you'll have some protection.
State of Iowa epidemiologist Dr. Patricia Quinlisk, always a pleasure to have you on the program.
Thank you for having me.
Susie Poulton, thank you. Director of Health Services for the Iowa City School District.
Thank you.
And Lila Rue, thank you for sharing your experience about having polio. And when we come back, we'll talk about hazardous materials being shipped through Iowa. It's River to River from Iowa Public Radio News.